You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Schwab, and on this She Leads Tech Series edition of the Isaka Podcast, we'll be discussing recent Isaka Tech Workforce Survey data and other topics related to women in the tech workforce with Natasha Barnes, an Internal Audit Tech Senior Manager. Natasha, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, Jay. Glad to be here.
So to get started, what attracted you to a technology-related field, and how has the reality meshed with whatever expectations you had coming in?
Sure. So I was actually a public relations major at Penn State, and it was my senior year where I had a friend who had also been exploring some alternatives, and one of them was a security and risk analysis major, and it was relatively new in our IT college. So I had also at the same time been doing a case study on Hurricane Katrina for my PR capstone course, where I was looking at that from a communications angle and seeing what could have been better and what could have mitigated some of the loss of life, damages, and other adverse impacts from that event. So the two items kind of converged at the same time, and then I decided that I wanted to pursue an extra year of school, and I got my security and risk analysis degree, and that's when I landed my internship at PwC, and that's where I've been really focused in IT since then. So that's how I got into it, and then has it matched? I think that more of my IT law classes and definitely the risk analysis classes have matched the type of work that I do now, whether it's IT internal audit support or it's doing other technology consulting engagements such as cyber security assessments, where these things all kind of come together, having to understand frameworks, having to seem somewhat like a lawyer, as my husband calls it, with having to analyze and then give people conclusions and interpretations to help decide where to go from there with mitigating their risks and having the appropriate controls in place.
In a moment, we'll get to some new Isaka survey data on various workplace dynamics. But before we do that, I wanted to ask which aspects of workplace culture are most important to you and how you're feeling about a given role.
In terms of culture, I think it's one of those things that's always interesting to describe. I feel like in an interview, it's hard to sometimes convey to someone what culture can be in a positive way until you maybe have experienced some cultural aspects that haven't been as productive. But for me, the things that I have found to be effective are having a variety of activities and ways for colleagues to get to know one another so that it can fit their personality types, their styles, preferences, etc. So ensuring that there's philanthropy, that there's internal initiatives of all sorts, and I will get into some of our Women in Tech, you know, initiatives that we have later, but just having that wide opportunity for people to get involved, to showcase their interests and talents in other ways, I think that's been something that I've always found to be important. It does usually take extra time, but I feel like it's time well spent, especially if it allows one to convey different parts of their skill set that they may not be able to do on their project, so they get to meet some other people outside of their solution area. And for me, sometimes the main motivation sometimes to go to work sometimes might be the people you work with. And I feel like those are when those bonds are forged during those types of initiatives or doing a proposal or something like that. Those are definitely important to me. And then the other parts I would say are work focused, and that's all about, you know, the advancement, like seeing that there are opportunities, knowing where one can go and continue to ascend through the hierarchy, and knowing that there are new opportunities, whatever that might be. So with learning new technologies, having a diversity of projects, diversity of industries, like having that ability to grow and seeing that that's a path that has worked for others and it's possible for you. Well, those are all the key things in aggregate that are important to me for culture and that I've seen also be helpful to my colleagues as well throughout my career.
Isaka's new tech workplace survey data indicates that while men report higher confidence in their ability to negotiate a salary increase or promotion, more women indicate they actually have been offered a salary increase or promotion in the last couple years. How do you size up that disconnect?
So the first thing that came to mind for me is that I think in general, men are more confident almost across industries and just in life in general. And I think that is something that women have been working on, trying to ensure that they build their confidence as well with being able to feel that these are fields that they can pursue and being confident within their capabilities and their progression. So I'm not surprised to see that part, that men have more confidence with doing that. And I feel like that negotiating is just something that perhaps they are drawn to in a different way. Not saying, of course, that women aren't also strong in that area, but just more generally what I've seen and heard. And then for women being able to say that they've been offered a salary increase or promotion, I think that does get to a lot of awareness being built around these topics that we're talking about, whether it's the ASACA surveys and other reports or other books like the Insecurity book that I've been mentioning and some other resources where women are trying to make sure that they are also advocating for themselves and that they are looking for allies, both men and women, and sponsors who can help them with advancing their career as well. So I think that's another part of it, that maybe that's how that disconnect is happening. The men do feel more confident in being able to do that, but I do feel that the women sometimes are kind of more silently working to the same aim. And I've had younger team members who have come up to me and, you know, really want to make sure they understand where they stand from a financial perspective. They want to know where they size up, and I've given them guidance on how they can do their own research to figure that out on their own. And then I've heard back from them that they do feel like more confident going into those conversations, and they've asked for things that they wouldn't have asked for before. And I know I certainly wasn't asking for these things in my earlier years in terms of promotions or salary increases. So I'm very impressed to see that tide turning, where I do feel that women are getting more. And maybe, I know the survey didn't say that, but I think their confidence is increasing too from my interactions with some of the more junior women on my teams and within my firm.
The survey also has some interesting data points related to tech professionals experiencing stress and burnout prompted by heavy workloads, tight deadlines, and resource challenges. Do you view that as an issue that can be especially difficult for women, given that there often remains a disparity in some household and parenting responsibilities between women and men? Or do you consider workplace stress to be an equal opportunity dilemma?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting question. I feel like my friends and colleagues and certainly my husband want me to be honest that burnout has definitely happened to me, and it's something I try to be mindful of for myself and those around me as well. You know, it's really hard when you have people who are performing at the highest they think that they can, right, and they're doing their best, and then that happens to them. So from what I see on my teams, it seems to be an equal opportunity, but I am working more with more junior team members typically. And I think when I look at my friends and colleagues who are more senior than me, I do see that there is that burden that women have in general, where they seem to be more in caretaker roles. So I do think that it could be continue to be skewed that way as well, which, you know, is unfortunate, but does seem to be kind of aligned with some of the more traditional, I think, views and data points that we've seen in other areas. So that's tough. And it kind of reminded me of this book that I've been looking at, which is I'm reading Insecurity. It's Why Failure to Attract and Retain Women in Cybersecurity is Making Us All Less Safe. And there was a point in that book where it talked about who the most overworked employee is typically. And it tends to be men who have children. And then the next person after that is women without children. And I happen to be a woman without children, married, I have a dog. So it was interesting to me to see that. I think that probably just adds to the whole issue that we're having with women taking on more for other people, whether it's their family or their friends. And it's hard to balance all that while trying to meet all the work demands. Sometimes I feel like it's like being a project manager at home and then being one all day. So the combination can be really challenging to manage at times.
So two follow-up questions for you on that. First off, what kind of dog do you have?
He is a pit lab mix. He is a shelter pup. He's 60 pounds. His name's Fuego, and he's brown with a white underbelly and paws.
All right, very good. And secondly, when you are feeling overburdened, is there a certain go-to coping mechanism that you have or a way to kind of reset mentally? Or do you more just try to muscle through a certain project or certain period and hope that things get better naturally?
Right. I think it depends. And I do think it is more of a multifaceted approach. You know, if you know something just might be really tough for the next few weeks and we just need to get it done, then I feel like those are easier to manage knowing that there is an end in sight. So I think that can be helpful. You know, honestly, it's something that I work at all the time to try and be better and to not forget and being negligent to that which helps to make me more balanced and whole while focusing very much on what needs to get done from a work perspective. So it is talking with friends some days or family or seeing what my husband is saying, okay, it seems like you're working pretty late and you haven't eaten or you haven't had a weekend off in a couple of weeks, so maybe you should do that. So I think it is a little bit of all those things, but I know I'm ultimately responsible, so it's me making sure that I get everything done. Like this week I'm on dog mom duty. So that means I need to wake up around 5:30 so I can walk my dog for 30 minutes. I can work out for 30 minutes and then get myself together and then help my husband with our family commitments as well before we leave for the day. So it's just me having to make sure I find that time and treating my personal life with the same level of accountability and rigor that I do with my work schedule, where I feel like I wouldn't want to be late to a meeting or miss a deliverable. I need to ensure that I'm viewing my life the same way. And conferring with other colleagues and friends about that is helpful. And I'm very fortunate to have colleagues and advisees on my team who advise me all the time. And we're all trying to keep each other accountable to remind ourselves, you know, go pick up your dog, go get your workout in, whatever needs to be done, so that we can all help each other stay more balanced. On top of that, I do have a really good advising team as well. So I check in with them often, especially during tough times, to make sure that we all see what's coming up on my schedule. We anticipate other commitments like presentations or events so that we try to get ahead of it. And if we can't, we try to manage it as best as we can. So yeah, that's kind of everything that we do.
In terms of the retention piece for organizations, in your view, are there more differences or similarities in the main reasons that men and women choose to remain with their organizations?
Yeah, I think that I've seen women look at an organization more from a holistic perspective where they can grow with them for a long time. So whether that's parental leave or having mobility options to work in a different office within their country or perhaps another country, you know, I've seen more of this holistic approach that's kind of more of the planner perspective, which is probably why they're more stressed out, more burned out, having to plan for today and tomorrow. Or maybe I'm just talking about myself there, but hopefully someone else resonates with that. I think for the men, the young men that I've seen, it seems almost more tactical. You know, they know they want to get promoted in a certain amount of time. They want to get to this next level. They see they can do that. They figure out how to do that in their current position at their current firm. And then once they attain that, then they look and see, does it make sense to stay here or should I go somewhere else? That's a generalization. I feel like it's, you know, obviously not everyone, but I do see a little bit more of that, like this focused on maybe compensation and promotion, and that's the main driver. But I do feel that with some of the more younger generations that I'm interacting with, I'm an older millennial myself, but some of the younger people I get to work with, you know, I do see that it's important to them to have culture and to have those events that we were talking about and those employee networking groups. So they do feel like they're part of this organization from a different perspective, not just an employee, they have a community. So I do see a shift happening there with men, at least the younger men that I've been working with.
Of course, there's been quite a bit of analysis about how millennials and young professionals are more inclined to move around quite a bit. Do you see certain criteria that could help keep many of them with their organizations for longer periods of time?
I do think that. And I don't think there's really anything very different from what some of the concerns are of the young people I work with now or throughout my other jobs in my career from what I had when I was at their stage of their career. So I think when I was coming up on, you know, becoming a senior consultant, that's about a few years in, you know, I think that's the time where people are trying to figure out, do you want to stay where you are? And then maybe that's government or private sector, maybe that's consulting, or do you want to go into internal audit, or do you want to be an auditor? And I think as everyone's trying out these different options they have within, you know, our realm of information assurance, I think that's really what they're trying to figure out. What can they live with and what do they really want and what have they yet experienced? They don't even know if they like it or not, but they want to give it a shot to see if it exists. So, you know, some of those things are really what I hear about. And I feel like that's the same thing that I wanted and the same thing I still want. I don't want to just continue to do the same project every year for the same client. I want to be able to keep growing as well. So I think it's from a management perspective, I think it's us understanding and really being in tune with our people to see what is it that they really need. Like maybe they really can't be on that client for a second year in a row because it's just not the right environment for them for whatever the reason may be. Or maybe they just want to take one project that's in a different solution that they haven't had a chance to explore yet, especially if it's related, you know, if it's an IT auditor who maybe wants to do something that's more security focused. I think that's where we as management have to try to make that a possibility for them, knowing that I think the reward will be bigger for both of us. I think knowing that they feel that they were heard and that we were able to make something work for them, which obviously can't always happen, you know, in an instant. It takes time to get projects lined up, of course. But I think when they eventually see that, I've seen good things happen. I've seen a reinvestment in knowing that they had someone who really looked out for them. And when they know they had a whole management team really trying to get them that new experience, and then hopefully they, you know what they want to do and what direction they want to go in. And then they can continue ascend up the ladder. And when they're a manager or when they have advisees, they can do the same thing for them to keep paying it forward. I do see that. I think more of the departures I've seen have been that there's a capability that perhaps a firm doesn't really have or it's not as developed as someone may want. So that's the reason why that they've left. But thankfully, we have a pretty awesome culture at my current firm right now. And I've been pretty fortunate that overall the cultures have been great throughout my career.
In the big picture, what do you consider to be some of the main ways that organizations can do a better job attracting and retaining women in technology roles?
I think there's a lot of options that we can consider and try. And that insecurity book that I mentioned earlier, I'm still studying that as well to see how we can leverage some tips that they've shared from around the world that have seemed to be helpful in certain areas. So I think from one perspective, it's being able to start really young. So our organization, we sponsor an external professional association, which is called Women in Tech. And it's something where we get several memberships, and I try to get our younger members out as much as possible, and really anyone who wants to go to these events, to network, to see that other women in tech exist, really, to be able to have those conversations and to see what their paths are. And so I think what's great about that I didn't have in my younger years is you're able to really understand what these other paths are from people who you can physically see and connect with to develop their own relationship with them to help. So that organization also, like many other organizations, sponsors a variety of activities for youth to be able to get youth involved earlier, like STEM for Her, for instance, that we are working to coordinate volunteer events with as well, where I think that's important as well, right? You know, get them interested young, let them know this isn't a field that they can't do because they haven't perhaps seen someone who looks like them doing that, whatever that may mean from a gender, from a race, ethnicity perspective. So I think those I've seen be helpful. And I went to a STEM for Her gala last year, and it was incredible because they had so many young girls there, and the interest levels that they had, it was definitely an emotional night for everyone in the room to just see how confident they were and that those programs through STEM for Her helped them really realize what their options were. And you see someone who's 10 years old saying, I can't wait to, you know, build robotics and be able to see how that can help within medicine and with rehabilitation. And that was really amazing to hear. And I hope she does do that. So I think those types of programs are where we want to keep seeing where we can get involved in, because we're starting to see that potential. I certainly didn't think like that. I didn't even think this was an option when I was younger. So I'm starting to see that change in possibilities. That's been really awesome to watch. And then from a retention standpoint, and even still recruiting, right, when we go to schools, like figuring out how can we get in contact with maybe their women in tech organizations and not just go through the traditional mechanisms we've had for recruiting to make more of that personal connection so that we can have more real conversations, not just online at the career fair where it's a few minutes and maybe not as meaningful as we want it to be. So I think doing some of that, I think, has been helpful as well. And then once we get here, you know, being able to let someone know in every interview, I tell everyone, hey, I'm involved in our Women in Tech initiative. If this is something you're interested in, very happy to talk with you more about it. It's another support group for you while you're here throughout your career, and to tell them about that as well. And that is offset, right, by the External Professional Association, where there's many, thankfully, Women in Tech-related associations out there. An organization, so, you know, partnering with them to try and get that pipeline going would definitely be helpful. And the last part for retention, for me, it's being there to support. And, you know, our internal organization for Women in Tech is relatively new in terms of it being formalized, but being able to see what is holding our young women back. What do they need more of? Do they need more mentors? They don't feel like they have anyone to talk to about some of the challenges because perhaps they're the only woman on their team. Do they not know what certifications would be of interest to them? Which honestly, at that regard, isn't very different from how I would mentor a young man either who's having the same concerns. But some of the conversations are different in terms of experiences that have happened. And that's where some of the distinction happens for me when I'm mentoring young women. But I think having those conversations, giving them a path, letting them know other people exist, all of that helps for them to see that they can stay here. They can have an awesome career here. And whether they're the first person in their solution or maybe the 20th, you know, we collectively can keep growing this practice. And we as a global IT community, we need more people. And clearly we need more women to get that done. And women just need to know it's an option for them and how they can make that a path.
Before we wrap up, can you tell us about your involvement with the GetIT program in the Washington, D.C. area?
Sure. So GetIT stands for Gender Equality in Technology and Information Technology. It is a Women in Tech initiative for my organization. And with that, it has been focused on trying to do a couple of different things. A lot of what we've really been talking about, how do we recruit, retain, and develop top talent, specifically women within the fields of technology. So that's been amazing to be involved with and see how it's evolving. And we have multiple chapters throughout our national area within the U.S. that have been collaborating together to see what ideas we can do. So what some of the things that we've done in our office areas, you know, we've had an information session. We go over kind of what the aims of GetIT are and how that will translate to us. some of what I already mentioned a little bit earlier. And then we started to try and understand, what do people need? Is it more mentoring? Can we do more trainings? So we share external trainings that are happening within our local area. And we also try to bring awareness to internal paths as well that we have within our firm to try and build that confidence and awareness of some of the development opportunities that one can use to help progress their career. So we do all of that. And then we also want to help with networking as well, so that internally people see, just like we were talking about, there are other mentors, whether they're in your office or another office or around the world, that one can talk with to try and help combat some of the issues that we were seeing, which is the lack of mentorship, a lack of representation, like we've talked about. So we're really trying to combat a lot of the things that we've seen and that have been in other ISACA reports and other guidance about women getting involved. So that's really been exciting, and each chapter is kind of doing their own efforts of trying to still realize the aims of what the initiative is trying to accomplish. And we're excited to see what comes more internally from a governance perspective as well, to help us funnel down to the chapters of how we can start seeing some more statistics of what our goals are as a firm, but then also how we're all collectively working to that to increase the number of women in general, but then also, of course, within technology as well. So we actually went over those stats at a recent event that we had about gender, where we talked with men and women about mentoring and about their paths and how they support one another within technology. And we were able to share some of our internal stats that was eye-opening and helpful for everyone to see where we are and where we're going, which is another reason why we have Get It. So that's been great, and it's been good to network with other women in tech organizations and other organizations that have an interest in doing something comparable. So it's been a great way to just connect with other companies to see how we can all collectively build this team and this force that we're trying to have to help us all fill the roles that we need.
Really appreciate your time today, Natasha. Thank you so much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
That's our program for today. For more on ISACA's She Leads Tech program, visit sheleadstech.isaca.org.